This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, president. For more than 20 years, helping Americans plan their retirement years with confidence. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our April 17th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we're to help you break through the barriers of being the average investor. And there are many barriers to get through, and it takes time. But if we do our job, we can help expedite you through that process. And we try to help you with good information and some perspective that comes from the experience of, you know, decades of market knowledge, of understanding the cycles and different asset classes and different sectors, different types of companies that are out there, and different ways that you can make money as well as lose money. So we are trying to help you make wiser choices on a day-to-day basis. Now today, retirees are realizing that investing in stocks only for their dividend sometimes carries significant risk. So the question is, should retirees dump their dividend-paying stocks? We've seen a lot of interest rate risk creep into the equity market when it comes to dividend-paying stocks. And what does that mean for your portfolio? What does that mean going forward? And is this a lesson that you can take? And I think for some of you it is, and some of you it's something to ignore. So that's one of our talking points today. And we're going to talk about the average investor and how we can characterize the average. And of course, there's no such person, but there are traits and mindsets that describe a large segment of the population. And that's really most individual investors. Frankly, that's most investors, whether it's individual or institution as well. And it's really about emotions and the fact that we are humans and we have human emotions, and that tends to bring in fear and greed. We tend to shun things that haven't done so well recently and love things that have done well recently, when many times that's not the best way to be thinking. Now, the average investor feels that there's a necessity to turn the stock market because they know it's the only way to at least have the potential of making their money grow, right? Most people turn to the stock market. And that's understandable because it is a place where you can find great long-term investments. Then there's a question of time. Do you have enough time or energy to do the research required to make these wise investment choices? Cost is important as well. Now, the average person would rather not pay a professional financial advisor like myself or Steve. But the average investor is most likely to act upon tips from the media on CNBC or from a friend or family member. And it usually ends up in a loss for lack of knowledge, lack of research, lack of understanding of risk, etc. Now, the data shows that the average investor does not realize the returns that they can expect from, say, a mutual fund. You know, compared to the professional, the average investor comes up short. They still can make money, but it's usually marginal gains. And that's because the average investor doesn't have the time to do the research that's really required to find the great investments. And if you do the research, you tend to keep stocks longer and really understand why you're invested in it, as opposed to just a story. And usually when you're just invested because of story and the stock goes down 10%, those emotions take over and you sell out. Because usually you're in it for the quick buck as opposed to the longer term game. Now, the average investor is afraid to sell when the stock is up because they fear of pulling out too early or missing more gains, right? They get excited over short-term stock performance. And then the average investor is afraid to sell when the stock's going down because it means acknowledging that they were wrong, that they lost money. Now, of course, the average investor also needs a return that beats inflation to get their retirement goals achieved. Now, for many, even maxing out your 401k is not going to be enough to provide the income that you need. So what's the average investor to do? And the answer, of course, is to break down the information barriers. Learn what you need to know. Separate yourself from the ranks of the average investor and those that watch Fast Money on CNBC, that take tips from Cramer or their cousin Vinny or their friend who they play racquetball with. Now we'll do what we can to help, but you have to answer your questions to start with. You know, what are your goals? What are your objectives? How much risk are you willing to take? Start with the bigger picture. And I think that's where people get it wrong more often than not, is they focus on that one story about that one company or that one asset class, and they don't look at the bigger picture. So we're here to try to give you that bigger picture perspective, keep your eye on the bigger picture, and answer any specific questions that you might have as well. So our listen line is open, 888-99-CHART. That's how to reach us with your question or comment anytime, 4 to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we're going to go to Alan in New York. He is a podcast listener. How you doing, Alan?
Hi, it's Aaron. I'm good. Justin.
Oh, Aaron. Okay, there we go.
I'm calling with a question about a Colombian stock, TGLS. It's Technoglass. I'm curious what your thoughts are on it.
TGLS. Haven't heard of this one. Certainly a small cap name, $356 million market cap. They manufacture tempered, laminated, silk screened, and thermoacoustic glass for commercial and residential buildings. So it sounds like they are tied into the building space, right? The construction world, new construction, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
The reason why I'm interested in it is because they appear to be able to compete rather advantageously against the U.S. market because they're based in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have a pretty hefty dividend. But I figured I would ask a professional and see if there's anything that might not be occurring to me.
Okay. I'm seeing their headquarters in the Cayman Islands, but you're saying they manufacture in Colombia?
That's my understanding.
Gotcha. Okay. It's certainly going to be cyclical because of the area that it's in, right? Their business doesn't really produce positive operating cash flow, so that worries me a little bit. Their payout ratio... it looks like they're making money, but their payout ratio isn't too bad, but they're not creating positive operating cash flow, so that worries me. So it's too opaque, it's too all over the place. They have a decent amount of debt that worries me. It's too small. The technicals aren't very good. If you look at the chart pattern, it's below all its major moving averages on a daily. Let me look at a weekly. Also on a weekly, on a downtrend. You know, I think it rallied on that idea that they're going to make a bunch of money, but it's kind of all over the place. I just don't like it, to be honest with you. And you're starting to see a slowdown in I think the multifamily space and certainly in the commercial real estate space, that could be an issue as well. Now, longer term, I think it's okay just because of the return on invested capital is pretty high, but it's going to be a very bumpy ride. This is not a safe dividend player. That dividend can go away very easily and very quickly. They only started paying it recently. So if they get in some sort of trouble financially, the economy goes down, they could easily cut that dividend. So this is a very high risk dividend player. Sorry.
Okay, fair enough. And see, I have a long time horizon. I'm in my mid-30s. Does that, given a willingness to buy and hold, does that change your assessment, or just the fact that it's risky would lead you to stay away from it?
Not the fact that it's risky and leave me to stay away from it. What would be worrying me the most is that they haven't shown an ability, a consistent ability, to create positive operating cash flow. It's been negative 4 out of the last 7 years. And it's kind of all over the place. To me, this company's too young to really give a long-term perspective on it. So, because of that and the technical nature of it, I would probably stay away from it for now. Thanks for the call, Aaron. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. We can help you today. We can talk about anything that's on your mind. The lines are open right now, 888-99-CHART. It's our live listener line. You can call every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time. Let's go to Steve in San Francisco. How you doing, Steve?
Doing well. How are you, Justin?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Cool. So I had a question about an investing strategy that I thought up of.
Okay.
So if a stock has like a really good dividend, and if I wanted just to collect on that dividend, would it be possible to go long and also short that stock and just, I mean, you'll be end up like zero, but you can collect on that dividend?
No, because when you're short a stock, you owe the dividend.
Oh, you owe the dividend.
You
Okay.
owe the dividend. Yeah. So no, that would not work, because you would just pay the commissions on both the long and the short. That's called being long, being short against the box is the term in the industry. And you can do that as a hedge sometimes if you want to avoid taking capital gains. There are sometimes people will deploy that strategy, right? Say they want to hold, say they'll hold it for 11 months and they want to get to capital gains full year in a month. They might short the stock for a month, exact same amount that they bought it for, that they own. And so there's no risk in the stock, but they wait until that full year, and then it comes a long-term gain, and then they can sell the long and cover the short, and then they're out of it. So there are times that you could utilize that strategy, but no, that's not an investment strategy that would work.
Okay, darn. Cool. Thank you so much.
No problem, Steve. Thanks for calling. Glad you asked that question, because it sounds like it could be simple, but there's no free lunch. I hear these strategies a lot that people come up with, but what you have to remember is that this is a game that has involved millions of people throughout decades and decades that have tried a million different strategies, and some of them work, but the vast majority do not. And simple ones definitely almost always are not as simple as you think they are. So great thought. Glad you're interested, but no, that would not work. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. 888-99 chart is how to reach me right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Love to hear from you. Chart, 888-992-4278. We have about 35 minutes left in the show, but it does go by quick. So give us a ring if you have a question. The sooner you call in, the better. Now, should retirees dump their dividend-paying stocks? It's one of our main talking points today with interest rates rising. Certainly, that's taken a hit for various sectors in the market. And what does that mean for your portfolio? So we're going to discuss that. I also want to touch on the CPI number and the retail sales report that came out today. Both were a little bit weaker than expected. And the big question, however, doesn't necessarily pertain to really the near-term economic impact, but what the Fed decision will be and if that will change the Fed decision-making process. And then there's some very interesting stats on wealthy people and how they spend their money. You are going to be shocked by some of these statistics. It's very interesting to see, and it kind of harkens back to the book A Millionaire Next Door, of, you know, most millionaires aren't exactly what you envision. And I'm going to give you some stats on why that is. And then finally, are banks behind the drop in car sales recently? So we're going to touch on that as well. Now let's take a look at the market today. We had the S&P up 20 points, the NASDAQ up 51, and the Dow up 183. So it was a nice positive day, solidly positive day after a very weak last week on the back of the issues with North Korea and the geopolitical, I don't say turmoil, but I guess angst is a good way to put it, that really drove the market lower, along with, you know, rising Fed rates. That's certainly giving a headwind to prices as well. I could easily see another retry to hit new highs in the S&P in the next week or two, but probably between now and the month end. I don't think we'll get to new highs, but I could certainly see a short-term rally because sentiment last week got pretty bearish. And usually when sentiment is extremely bearish, you get at least some sort of short-term market pop. So don't be shocked if you see that over the next week or two. Let's go to Joel in San Jose. How you doing, Joel?
Pretty good there, Justin. Thanks a lot. Really enjoy your show. You just give the plain talk, and it's easily understood for I'm not a long-term investor, but anyway, I wanted to get your opinion on a stock, LAZ, Lazard. I think they're mainly into mergers and acquisitions of some large entities. So anyway, that's what I'm calling about, just what you think about it.
So are you looking for that dividend or the growth, or what's your time horizon for this?
Well, they seem to give once a year a whopping dividend, some income, you know, and kind of keep the risk factor down, you know, and growth is always welcome.
Yeah, we all like growth, right? To me, this is, it's not a bad company. It's certainly a name that has longevity, and it's probably one of the better investment banks on the street. And they've always been somewhat more conservative, I think, than the average. So when it comes to the smaller investment banks, I kind of like Lazard. The issue is, when you're looking at it as a dividend payer, its dividend is certainly safe as long as the economic cycle stays intact, right? The issue is that when you hit a recession, this can go down a lot. And so it can be very volatile. For example, in 2007, it hit a high around $55 a share, and it bottomed out around $20 a share. Okay. So you can easily have a large move like that. And you had one starting 2015, it peaked out around $60 a share and hit a low of $26 a share. So a 50% drop in this is certainly not out of the question. So if you're looking for a safe dividend payer, you know, I don't think this is your name. If you're looking for something that will continue to go up as long as the economic cycle stays intact, then this is a name for you. But frankly, I actually think this is up against a lot of resistance. It's a little expensive at these levels. And so I'm not a big fan of Lazard here. Now, like I said, long term, 20, 30 years, it's probably a good company to own. But if you can't handle a 50% drop in the name from these levels, then you probably shouldn't be in it.
All right. Well, thank you much.
No problem, Joel. Thanks for calling. That was Lazard Limited, L-A-Z. Kind of a smaller investment bank, even though it is a $5.8 billion market cap. But it's one of the smaller investment banks on the street. Now we're at the halfway mark for this Monday edition of Invest Talk, and I want to hear from you. We have some talking points we got to get to, but always your call comes first. So let's hear your money question at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues, but first a couple of words about a webinar coming up. Join registered investment advisors Justin Klein and Jason Toper Wednesday, April 26th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. And this webinar is free, but attendance is limited, so you need to sign up. Just go to investtalk.com. That's InvestTalk with two T's, investtalk.com, and click on the InvestTalk tab. Fundamental and technical analysis, back to the basics. Wednesday evening, April 26th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Register now on investtalk.com. InvestTalk continues, and next time, fixed income investors are attracted to closed-end funds because many produce a steady stream of income. Income. Should you be open to closed-end funds? Justin will talk about that next time on Invest Talk. You set the topic now, 888-99-CHART.
Now, is it time for retirees to dump their dividend-paying stocks? Now, obviously, since about the middle part of last year, you saw interest rates rise pretty dramatically. And if you look at the 10-year Treasury bond, we hit a low of about 1.33 in July of last year, and we hit a high in December of 2.62%. So basically, the rate on the 10-year Treasury doubled. And interest rates have an interesting effect on not just bond prices, which is what everyone tends to think about, but it also has an effect on bond-like proxies. Bond-like proxies in the marketplace. And the top three most sensitive areas of the stock market that move with interest rates are REITs, real estate investment trusts, utilities, and telecom stocks. Think of AT&T and Verizon, right? With utilities, think of Southern Company, all the various utilities that are out there throughout the country. And REITs, they pay healthy dividends. So all three tend to pay significant dividends, and usually anywhere from 3 to 5, sometimes 7-10%. And if interest rates on treasuries, which are super safe, go up, those become relatively less attractive. And for we've talked about this for a long time, is that for 30 plus years, you've seen interest rates march lower and lower. And certainly you had periods between like 2003 and 2007 where interest rates generally went up. But overall, over the last 30 plus years, interest rates have gone down pretty consistently. And that has been a giant tailwind to not just real estate prices, which we've talked about before, but also the values of dividend paying stocks. Because suddenly, you know, 30 years ago, you could get a 10-year treasury rate 10-12%. So who wants to buy something that's a utility that's yielding 4 or 5%? Well, suddenly, not suddenly, but over 30 years, that slowly changed. And the difference on a utility stock is much, much different. And utility stocks have appreciated, REITs have appreciated, all these dividend paying stocks have appreciated. And these are stocks that a lot of our retirees hold in their brokerage account. And they're suddenly seeing the effects of higher interest rates. And you can see that in multiple asset classes. Long-term bond index, the Vanguard Long-Term Bond Index, fell 10.7% from early July of last year till beginning of December last year. REITs fell 9.9%. Utilities fell 9.2%. So they have significant interest rate risk. Now the question is, should that scare you off from those stocks? And I'm going to say, in the short term, no. I don't think you should be particularly worried, because I actually think interest rates are set to drop in the near term. However, the trend has changed. Interest rates are going to be going higher. And this will be a headwind for price appreciation. So reducing your exposure to REITs and real estate overall of your total financial picture is probably a good idea in the longer term, even though we just picked up a couple of REITs, probably for a medium-term trade, but you know, we picked up a few weeks back. But the next rally is probably something you want to think about cutting back your exposure. Same with utilities. Same with telecom stocks. Now, does this mean you should abandon them completely? No. They certainly play a role in your portfolio. But what you have to consider now is that you are no longer going to have this tailwind of lower and lower interest rates that are going to inflate your asset prices, your asset prices that are significantly tied to cash flows. And the cash flows we're talking about are those dividends. Just like a bond has interest payments, these stocks have dividend payments. So you need to think about the next rally in bonds, in interest rate sensitive stocks. Think about lightening up your load, reallocating some capital. And I would say actually to the short-term bond market, shorter, 5 years. The five-year bond was only down 2% during that time period I just stated, where all those stocks were down 10% plus. And that kind of looks like our balanced income program, where there's some dividend paying stocks, but there's also that heavy medium term to short term bond portion that really doesn't have a lot of volatility. And that's a great aspect of a portfolio. Now let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Pete from Vegas calling. Question I have is, I was listening to another show, and I was talking to a friend of mine, and there was a term that came up that I've never heard of, which is when this other host introduces guests, he asks them, are you a top-down mutual fund manager, or are you a bottoms-up? Now, I kind of think that bottoms-up probably means that he's a value investor, but I'm not quite sure what top-down is, and I'm not even sure that bottoms-up, or my interpretation of it, is actually accurate. So anyway, if you could tell us what a tops-down or bottoms-up kind of a mutual fund manager is. Anyway, this is Pete from Vegas, guys. Love your show. Download it every night. Wouldn't miss it for anything. Thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy. Have a nice one. Bye-bye.
That's a great question, and it is a term that is used regularly on the street in our profession. And the difference is top-down tends to mean I'm looking at the economic picture, right? I'm looking at economic trends in the short term, medium term, long term, very, very big picture, right? And then you're saying, okay, the economy is in this stage of the cycle, so I'm going to focus on these areas of the marketplace, and these are the mutual funds I'm going to own, the stocks I'm going to own, the bonds I'm going to own, ETFs, etc., to go along with my top-down analysis of what's going on in the broader economy, short-term, like I said, short-term cycles, longer-term cycles, etc. Bottom-up is, I'm going to look at individual names. I'm going to focus on these individual companies. And what happens in the broader economy doesn't matter so much, because if my thesis is right on these set of names, in these areas of the marketplace that are, I think, are doing well because of their own specific trends, then the top up or top down type of analysis doesn't matter much. Now, we are kind of both. We do research on both sides. We want to understand the broader economy. We think that's very important, but also specific companies have specific risks and rewards that we assess and we invest based on their specific merits as well. And sometimes you ignore or take less weight in what's going on from the top-down approach of the broader economy. So we like to use both, but many other advisors or analysts can be one or the other, and some are both as well. Let's go to Lynn in the Bay Area. How you doing, Lynn?
Hi, how are you, Jesse?
I'm good.
I have a question.
Sure.
So I'd like to know what's different between inflation versus deflation? And these two terms, which one will hurt us more in the long run?
That's a good question. I would say inflation hurts more in the long, long run. Now, inflation is when prices are rising in the economy, right? The price of the rent on your apartment or the utilities that you pay, the food you're buying, the clothes you're buying, that's when prices are going up. Now, deflation is the opposite. All those prices are going down. Now, I actually think in the short term, deflation is great. Things are cheaper. But the economists and the banking sector wants inflation. That's why the Fed is always targeting positive inflation. They don't like deflation. And why is that? It's because the banks, right, they're the ones lending out money. And if the value of things in the economy are shrinking, but the obligations to the bank are staying static, it's much harder for people to pay back those loans, right? So if wages are going down, that's a difficult situation for banks. And the Federal Reserve is trying to keep the banks healthy and the economy healthy in that way. And the way they do that is spurring inflation, meaning incomes are going higher. And therefore, that loan you took out 2-3 years ago is now actually a little bit cheaper today because your income's gone up a little bit, and therefore the banks are making profits and they're lending money and things are going well. Does that make sense?
Sure, yeah. Thank you for your answer. Thank you so much.
No problem, Lynn. Thanks for calling. Great question. I like those big, broad questions that really get to the heart of some things that I know can be confusing. You know, this is a confusing game sometimes and confusing endeavor, and I'm glad I could provide some clarity. Now, we have an InvestTalk Wealth webinar coming up this month. This one is aimed at the hands of an investor who wants to sharpen their analytical skills. It's going to be called Fundamental and Technical Analysis Back to Basics. And I will be hosting this along with one of our other advisors in the office. His name is Jason Toper and went to USC. He's been with us for, almost 15 years now. Now, the date is April 26th at 6:30 p.m. It's coming up it's a week from Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. Fundamental technical analysis, back to basics. We're going to talk about what metrics you should be looking for, what matters most. How to screen for the attractive stocks using various, some free and some not free tools on the internet. We're going to talk about how to identify chart patterns that work in today's market. And it's going to be free. And it's an hour long, but you do have to sign up and you can register right now. It's open on investtalk.com. So why not sign up now? It's free. Once again, the date is April 26th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time.
If you live near San Ramon in Northern California, Steve will be there April 25th for individual retirement reviews. And if you're not near our California offices, you know you can meet with Steve via Skype or telephone. It's easy. And if you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
Hi, this is Mike from Tracy. Great show. Steve had commented on Teva or Teva a few weeks ago that the support or the would be around $32. It closed at $32.06, I believe, on Friday, and I was just wondering if the fundamentals looked good enough to dive into purchasing some shares. Look forward to hearing your reply. Again, great show. Thank you. Bye.
At Teva Pharmaceuticals, and this is a name that we do own for some managed accounts in not all of our programs or our strategies, but one of them. It was actually our income strategy. Now, the fundamentals are pretty strong. The PE is very low, yields about 3.6%, cash flows remain strong. It's in a sector of the economy or in the it's in an area of a sector, the healthcare sector, the pharmaceutical sector, that is under a lot of pressure, and that is the generic space. So they're all kind of under pressure for multiple reasons, colluding, et cetera, on prices. And so the price is depressed dramatically. We think they'll get past it. It has kind of hung around this 32 to 35 area for a while. I actually think the major support is at $30 a share. So I think it certainly could trade down there between now and, you know, when it finally bottoms. So don't think it's without its risk. What worries me the most, you want me to know what worries me the most, is that a ton of our listeners are calling interested in it. And usually when the average investor is so excited about a name, they're usually wrong. Now, like I said, we still like the company. We still like, we think long-term it's fine, low debt. Earnings are turning around, sales are turning around, and it's cheap. But that is, I'll be frank, that does worry me a little bit. But we still like it long-term. But you know, it's a bottoming process. These things don't turn around overnight, but we still like it. 8899 chart, 8899924278. We have 10 minutes left, so give us a call as soon as possible. Now, here's proof that rich people are total cheapskates. That even the uber wealthy love a great deal. And this is a lesson that Neiman Marcus is learning these days. According to a new report from the Wall Street Journal, notes that high-end chains have been raising their prices over the past decade, and they're learning the hard way that even wealthy consumers are bargain hunters. And there's multiple surveys that say this. One in three people worth $5 million or more say they shop at Walmart. And one in four of those people say they shop at Target. Half of them shop at Costco. For every $5 spent at the dollar store, $1 is spent by someone who's making over $100,000 a year. One of the most popular cars for people making over $250,000 a year, the Ford F-Series, the Jeep Grand Cherokee, and the Jeep Wrangler. You want to know who's the most frequent users of coupons? People who are making over $100,000 a year. You're listening to Invest Talk. Glad you're here with us today. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
I have a question, and the question is about gold. I'm wondering if I should buy gold. I don't know if it's going to conflict with the commercial interest, but I hear a lot of gold trying to be sold, and I just want to understand how that's going to be affected, maybe in the long term. Thank you.
I do think that we are entering a bull market in gold. I think we started it last year, beginning of last year, and we had a pullback in the latter part, mainly fourth quarter of last year. And I guess it started in the middle of third quarter. And we've had a rally so far this year in gold. It's probably the best asset class performance-wise so far this year. Now, in the short term, I do think it is a little overbought, and we could see another pullback. But I think we are in the midst of a bull market in gold. So I am a fan. Now, banks may be behind the drop in car sales. Now, March saw a very big drop in automobile sales. They fell to an annual pace of 16.5 million, and that's well below what analysts were expecting at 17.3 million, and it was the weakest sales rate since February of 2015. So the big question is, What happened? Well, what's happening is delinquencies involving vehicle loans rose in all categories, from just your standard one to the junk rated vehicle loans in the first quarter of 2017. And the value of those behind on loan payments for at least 30 days swelled to $23.3 billion in December 2016. That's a 14% increase from a year earlier. And this is according to the Federal Reserve. Now more than 10% of senior bank loan officers said they expect a pullback on extending credit to car buyers in 2017. So what they're seeing, and this is standard, right? Think back in the housing bubble. You saw delinquencies rising in 2006, 2007, and eventually early 2008, there were so many delinquencies in the housing market that credit just got cut off by almost every bank out there. And that's really what created the financial crisis, is that banks just cut off the credit. And they do this when they see rising delinquencies. And it starts with tightening lending standards. And this tends to feed back into demand, and that's a big issue. And if you look back in history, poor auto sales have preceded broader economic downturns in the U.S. most times. And many economists claim that car sales have a ripple effect throughout the economy, because what happens is, think of all, it's just like a home in a smaller sense, but definitely like a home where there are people on the production line that may be furloughed. They're going to lose out on income. You're going to have the car salesmen that are going to lose out on income. You're going to have finance companies that are extending less loans, and so earning less money, so they may lay off people, right? And then there's all the component makers of the car, that are making components for the cars. They're going to get laid off or furloughed as well. So there's a big supply chain on the sales side and even the maintenance side as well, that really feeds into the auto sector. So when auto loans decline, that really has an interesting feedback loop that can really mean bad things for the broader economy. So it also could mean bigger risk for the consumer overall. So be aware of this. Understand that this is something you've got to keep an eye on. And it's always a factor that you need to be monitoring on a regular basis. Now, Goldman Sachs actually thinks that the impact maybe a little bit broader than that. And the reason for the reduced purchases of cars may be a little bit more than just delinquencies on auto loans and reduced credit standards, higher credit standards. They actually think it's because of the sharing economy, Zipcar, Uber, Lyft, etc., that are causing younger people to shun buying a car and just using the ride-hailing services like Uber. Interesting theory, but that's what they think. Looks like we're done for this hour. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, chief executive officer of KFP Financial. We are a registered investment advisor firm. Now, you can reach me directly with a question or a comment. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Steve button or Contact Justin, and we will get right back to you. And on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thanks for being with us. Let's plan on getting together tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.